Today's episode of the Cantina is brought to you by Grow Generation. Whether you're at the Death Star or the Senate, they have everything you need to grow right where you are. More from them later in the episode.
Welcome to a galaxy far, far away. Here at the Cantina Podcast, we provide top shelf service, including rumors, leaks, news, and reviews. Come in, order a Loman Ale, and remember, no droids allowed.
I hate that key light. Oh, okay. Ow!
Oh, that was Michael Jackson, like,
ow! Ow! Yeah, guys, that's not what it is. That's Kyle speaking out in awful pain. Welcome, everyone, to the Cantina, the show where we get to talk about Star Wars for the next 30 minutes to an hour, sometimes more, because Cam and I get excited. As I grab a sheet of paper to help me keep notes and time stamps, guys, thank you so much for checking us out. If you're watching us on YouTube, LRM's YouTube channel, thank you so much. Please hit the subscribe button and leave us some comments. Thumbs up, thumbs down. We'll take the hate clicks. You guys can't see the hate clicks anymore on some things, and other things we still can. I don't know. I appreciate knowing whether or not I'm doing a good job, but thumbs down only doesn't help out too much. So if we're fucking up, please leave some comments down below. And then the Genreverse Podcast Network, LRM Online's Genreverse Genreverse Podcast Network, wherever you get the your podcast from, Spotify, Google, Apple, all that good stuff. Where are they? There, social media information down below. Thank you, Grow Generation. And of course, thank you to my day at the races. The wonderful background music that's not the intro and outro music, which is available via YouTube's wonderful media library. Guys, they're an awesome band. Check them out. Anyways, I'm Kyle Malone, one of the hosts of this awful booze barge that everyone likes to come to and stink up the place. And then the other one over there across the pond is Cam Clark. What's up, buddy?
Hello, I'm fine. How are you?
I'm hanging in there. You know, we're recording on the American Thanksgiving holiday, Thursday. So to everyone out there that did that does Thanksgiving, I hope you had a good one. I'll be prepping, but I'm also getting into the post Thanksgiving spirit, wearing my ugly Christmas sweater.
So America is basically like Star Wars season the day after Thanksgiving stops.
I mean,
is that when it starts?
What season?
Sort of Christmas season.
No. Well, that's how generally most of us feel. But of course, the commercialism, like the stores and stuff, they've had Christmas shit out since like September. It keeps getting earlier and earlier.
It's earlier.
Awful, man. That we're jolly
not quite
Batman
as early as that, but
yeah,
I do hate when people put their Christmas decorations up after Halloween. You're like, no.
Yeah, it's a bit too early. But yeah, the day after Christmas is when a lot of Americans will begin their
the day after
Christmas Thanksgiving will begin their Christmas decorations. I have my classic red and black Santa hat I would wear, but it wouldn't fit under the headphones very well. So yeah, man, I got this ugly Christmas sweater like a year ago or 2 years ago. I don't know, man. As far as Star Wars Christmas sweaters, that's not too shabby, is it?
It's all right. It's all right, yeah.
I'm not a big fan of the
whole Christmas sweater thing.
Neither am I.
I don't really like sweaters in general, but yeah, that's not a bad one.
Anyways, guys, that's it for all the housekeeping and stuff like that. We've actually got some Star Wars news to talk about, not just rumors, some actual official stuff that's been announced. And of course, we'll be talking about some potential rumors and things through other stories. But the first one to kind of talk about is some directors for the Book of Boba Fett. Cam, you just put this piece up, man. What'd you read?
Most of the information we've been getting this week has been coming from Empire Magazine's coverage of Star Wars. And the issue was just released today. So far, Empire Online's released a couple of snippets, some conversations, which have, you know, it's Star Wars, so it's stories, it's news. But today, one of the things that has come out since the Empire magazine has actually hit shelves is that there is some extra Boba Fett, Book of Boba Fett directors listed on there. So we already knew from Star, Tamir Morrison, and Common Sense probably a little bit as well, Dave Filoni, Robert Rodriguez, and Bryce Dallas Howard. We kind of knew Robert Rodriguez was filming multiple episodes, but that was confirmed within the article as well. But we have two other names, which are Steph Green, who has directed episodes of Watchmen, the HBO series, and Kevin Tankaron. I don't know how if I'm pronouncing that.
I'd probably use the sound as well, yeah.
Who has directed episodes of Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., obviously, on the Marvel side of things. So both experienced directors. Obviously, there are rumours that the Book of Boba Fett is 9 episodes long, as opposed to Mandalorian's 8. That's still to be officially confirmed, but that's what we're kind of hearing on the grapevine anyway. Not going to say yay or nay on that. We'll find out the same as everyone else. But if it is, I can't see Robert Rodriguez direct being the only one that's directing multiple episodes, or I believe that there's maybe some more names that haven't actually been listed yet, maybe for later on in the season or something like that, that are going to pop up as well.
Who knows? Do you think Tony Favreau
could be a name? He's not listed as a director, he's only listed as an executive producer for this show at the moment, but I mean, that's not to say he couldn't have directed an episode later on in the series. You could be looking at some of the fan favourite ones coming back, like, you know, Peyton Reed.
Peyton Reed's been pretty busy, though.
He's been shooting, obviously, Ant-Man and the Wasp Quantumania at the moment, which is just wrapped a few days ago kind of thing. So, I mean, maybe not, but who knows? I don't see Robert Rodriguez directing 5 episodes of the Book of Boba Fett if it's in any episode run. So it could just be that there are multiple episodes for multiple people, and that's just not been mentioned yet. But either way, we know that Rodriguez is directed at least more than one, and we have now the name of 5 different people that are directing, but that doesn't quite cover the full season, potentially. But I'm just going to have to wait and see on that one.
Yeah, I wouldn't mind seeing any of the Mandalorian the directors come back. You know, like you mentioned, Peyton Reed is a fan favorite of.
Not going to be Deborah Chow. It won't be Chow because of.
Yeah, she's real busy.
Obi-Wan Kenobi.
But I wouldn't be surprised or upset at all if Rick. Famu, I can't pronounce his last name very well.
Famu Yina, I think it is. I would be fine seeing
Taika coming. I don't think he would because he's also busy.
But it's
one of those things where, I mean, hell, they've carried Bryce Dallas Howard for a few things now. I would not be surprised unless we've heard something different of the potential of even her going and doing an Ahsoka episode with Dave.
No, like, I can see that. That kind of makes sense to me. She's kind of learning her trade as a director here on these shows, if you like. You know, she didn't have a massive amount of directing experience before Mandalorian, but now she's been on Mandalorian 1, Mandalorian Season 2, now on Book of Boba Fett. I would guess she might turn up again in Mandalorian Season 3, and then, could be Ahsoka as well, who knows?
It could be one of these situations
where at some point down the future she gets to showrun one or gets a little bit like Deborah Chow got with Obi-Wan Kenobi. I'm not saying it's not a rumour or anything like that, just speculation that maybe that's something that we could see in the future.
Yeah, definitely. The good thing about this is, unlike some of the movies and projects for some of the other movie projects, we haven't had a lot of director turnover that we're aware of. Now, they could have easily asked 10 other people that actually brought them in, and after one or two days, they were like, nah. But it obviously wasn't, it never even seemed to get anywhere enough that we even caught wind of any issues on that side. So, you know, Watchmen was a competent show. It's not everyone's favorite. It's not everyone's
least. I would say it was a bit better than competent myself. I thought it was amazing. Yeah. But, yeah. You know, that's just me.
Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. kind of started as a competent, you know, run-of-the-mill, that era show, but it quickly went off the deep end after the first
season. I
don't
know, season. I think it got better in the middle. And
really?
Then
I couldn't stick with it after three.
Once they kind of stopped worrying about the canon, you know, the first two seasons seemed to kind of just try and fit into the MCU more. And I think after they got rid of S.H.I.E.L.D., after Captain America, the Winter Soldier, you know, kind of shut all that sort of side of things down. I actually think the show got better for a few seasons. No. But, you know, again, it wasn't my favourite show in the world. It was a switch your brain off TV show. Mm-hmm. But, I mean, it was always competently directed.
Yeah,
I would argue about the writing, but, exactly. You know, the ideas presented. But,
which is what I was kind of saying about Watchmen, how some people weren't big fans of the show. It was still a competent show. It was done well regardless.
Yeah, in Emmy award winning. So.
Exactly. And so bringing in these two names that might not have a large amount of credits or be the most known names out there, I'm completely fine with it. I mean, look, I'll be honest, I have not gone back and watched Mando 1 or 2 all the way through since we reviewed them. I've watched individual episodes and clips. A part of it is something Manny had said a while ago when we were discussing Ghostbusters before it even came out, Ghostbusters Afterlife, and we were talking about things that hold up and things that don't. And he was like, "I don't know if Mando will hold up as well as we remember." And it made me think about the Force Awakens and how after like the third time seeing it, the shine started wearing off. And even before The Last Jedi came out, and most definitely after, you're like, "Okay, yeah, we should have done something different with the Force Awakens." But regardless of how the story pans out, everything that we've seen, all of our reviews, we constantly talk about the directors, their use of action shots, sometimes cursing their filler shots. You know, come on, how many times do we need to watch someone ride a mount or bike through the desert? But I'm excited to bring in new. It reminds me of when Marvel was first getting started, and they're tapping all these mid-tier to low-tier, and I realize something is in my camera shot. Sorry about that, guys. Giving people a chance to make a big name on this platform, and as much as we curse big studios for often just sticking with what works, I mean, they've taken some risks with some of these names on here.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know if it's that risky. I mean, to be honest, I mean, these are both very experienced directors.
Them. I'm saying just in for the whole show, bringing in.
In terms of.
Exact. Bringing in not big a big name or one director to rule them all. That's what I was getting at.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. So. Yeah, I mean, it has provided, it's a kind of, it's a guideline, a baseline that Star Wars have used now for the Filoni and Favreau verse, if you like, where, you know, they've got these multiple directors for each episodes. And actually, it's going to be interesting to see that change when we see Obi-Wan Kenobi, because obviously that's one director the whole way through. It's a very different kind of thing. And Andor is the same. So, Tony Gilroy, but it'll be interesting to see if that changes anything as you know, as we work through it, because there was always that thing in The Mandalorian where you were kind of, what did you think of how the director did this, you know, kind of thing. That was always a conversation we had, the goods, the pros and the cons, potentially for each director for each different episode, without necessarily looking at the entire story or the entire series as one package. And we were probably far more critical in season one because there was a couple of dead episodes in season one that just didn't help the move the story along. And that really wasn't there in season two. And there was a kind of, I think, a better pacing to the overall series, certainly in season two. So so it never really came up, and we were really just more positive about everything that it worked on season two, ultimately.
Yeah. You know, I guess we can kind of stick with Book of Boba Fett and talk about one of the producers, showrunners, if you Favreau had some comments out of Empire Magazine as well, if I'm not mistaken, right? Yeah, let me transition over to that. And it's he says
a bit of kind of background to where we're coming into
to kind of prepare us a bit. Most of it you can kind of infer from the trailer quite easily, also by lines that were said in season two.
There's nothing spoilery here.
Nothing at all. So he says, this is from Empire. There is a power vacuum because Jabba is gone. Jabba was clearly a very strong and a very strong and imposing leader who people were very scared of and who seemed to rule with an iron fist. We see all that explained in the trailer. He pulls somebody like that out of the ecosystem of Tatooine and Hutt's space in general. Are we going to see Nar Shada? Hopefully. Sorry, there was a nuclear launch detected on Ire. Hold on. I got to send some Archons to take care of that ghost. Anybody play StarCraft out there?
No.
You should.
I don't even know what you're talking about.
It's awesome. My notification ring is the one of the species in StarCraft, which is like Command & Conquer, real-time strategy.
Yeah,
yeah.
Okay? RTS, yeah.
whenever you launch a nuke, and it's detected, it'll say something. Anyways, where was I? Hutt space in general, and you have the opportunity that's ripe in the gangster genre, which you and I immediately were like, oh, okay, so it's not so much anti. They're going for Tony Soprano. They're going for The Godfather. They're going for the old mafioso type. Yeah.
They're bad guys, but they can still lead a show. And they can still be interesting. And you can't help but like them anyway.
Yeah.
Even though they're morally dubious. And I think
Payback. We always bring up Payback as a prime example of
a bad guy at least one.
Yeah, you can root for him because he's fighting even worse bad guys.
And basically, that's it. Yeah, you just need to have even worse people to put them against. And it's very much. There was some fans out there said, I don't want them to turn him into a hero. And I don't either.
I don't either.
But that's not the feeling I get from the trailers, from what Favreau's saying. I mean, we can't say for certain what will happen as the show progresses, but that's not, I certainly hope not, but that's not what it seems like going in at this point.
It all kind of depends on how much, how far is he willing to go towards even technically someone that's good but working against him? Because even the mafia, if you're doing the right legal thing, and I'm talking mafia shows, not real life and stuff, you're still going to cross them wrong because they still got to run their business. So
the Outer Rim's still a pretty lawless place, though, isn't it? Even the Empire didn't have a massive sort of heavy-handed influence in the Outer Rim, and that's why it was Jabba, Hutt-controlled space. It was basically run by the crime lords rather than a former government. So I guess at this point and where the New Republic is, probably that wouldn't be changed yet with it. We're talking 5-6 years after Return of the Jedi. I don't see that.
But you could run into a local do-gooder, things like that. That's what I'm saying.
Yeah, absolutely.
But, Favreau got to continue on. Although Boba Fett is a very experienced bounty hunter, he's not experienced at running a criminal syndicate or managing forces. He's not normally a newcomer. He's an expert, as we see him in most areas. But in this case, he's trying to transition, to another position. End quote. So, like I said, everything that we saw in the trailer. Jabba is gone. He did things fucked up. I don't like the way he did things, so I'm going to do them differently. And everyone that stands against me is going to pay. Pay! And we get Fennec Shand for the ride, which I absolutely love. Ming-Na Wen is an amazing actress and a wonderful person to listen to off
screen. And one of those directors we talked about directed the famous May versus May fight in Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., which was Ming-Na Wen versus Ming-Na Wen, you know, in a big fight. So, so there's definitely a bit of familiarity there, certainly. From her and his point of view.
Yeah, and Favreau, of course, heavily involved in the MCU, both in director and producer chairs, as well as being an actor as Happy Hogan. So I even wonder if he's had run-ins with I forget the director's name, but yeah, I wonder if maybe they had run-ins there in the early days of MCU's stuff with Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., but it's cool, man. It's not necessarily what I would have wanted, but it can still be executed in a way that I will thoroughly enjoy. I'm less afraid of this than I was Ghostbusters Afterlife.
You know, you're never quite sure with Robert Rodriguez with the way he puts things across, but his quote's interesting as well, that he says, "We'll see a lot more of his true character in this season, as opposed to we maybe didn't in the Mandalorian season 2, and you'll definitely see him have to turn barbarian mode."
Yep.
That sounds kind of fun. It does. But sometimes Rodriguez can kind of overhype things the way he talks about it, and he has been very hypey for the Book of Boba Fett, so we'll see if the show actually delivers on his promise.
Do you have any like legit concern about this show not doing well for you?
Not really. It seems like a bit of a slam dunk. They would have to really mess it up to push me back at this point.
It's like, even though it's not...
I mean, I look at it and go, I think they should have went further, exactly, you know, in this direction or blah, blah, blah. But those would be, you know, after seeing it, you know, 2020 hindsight reviews, you know. That's fine. But, you know... Yeah, to actually turn me off it, to make me think, oh, I don't know if I want to watch this. And yet, that's how I went into The Mandalorian Season 1, because we had just come out of, obviously, The Rise of Skywalker's ineptitude. And, you know, you worry, oh, is this just going to be more shit, basically? But, you know, it wasn't the world's greatest TV show, but The Mandalorian Season 1 was decent. And then Season 2 improved. You know, it was a lot better. It was an enjoyable ride. So, you know, in terms of the people that are controlling this side of things, so far they've never really let me down. So, you know, just like we do with Marvel, you kind of give them that faith to carry on and see what they can do.
Although there's definitely now a chink in the armor after the Eternals, man. I'm telling you, I've never. That is my least favorite, lowest rated Marvel movie, other than. Maybe Iron Man 3 at this point. Like, I hated it.
There's a few I didn't like. If I'm honest, you know, I wasn't too keen on Captain Marvel.
More entertaining than this. I don't care for it. Like, entertainment value only. But, yeah.
That is the general feeling amongst the kind of LRM towers anyway. Everybody that has seen it seems to, it wasn't that good. Even that, what's Nick saying about it? Because he's usually put Marvel on it. And
he gave it like a D+, I think.
Really?
Yeah, Nick was
that good.
He's got the moments that he likes, but he's like, yeah, this was just not, it just doesn't land. And for me, it's honestly, it's the jarring jumping back in time and to the present. But each time you jump back in time, you're coming closer to the present. And literally, that the entire first act is just complaining, complaining about the mission, complaining about not doing the mission, complaining about doing the mission too much, complaining about your life during the mission, complaining about your life before the mission. Like, it is awful. But anyways, we're here to talk to Star Wars, not Marvel, on Marvel Multiverse Mayhem, which you guys can catch hopefully later today, where we covered Hawkeye episode one and two. And I, you know, I guess a good reset, unless you got anything else you wanted to say. Oh, well, actually, you know what? Let's not reset for the ad yet. I do want to mention the barbarian mode thing. I guess we saw a bit of that when he gets his, you know, gaffy stick out and is beating shit down there, right? in Mando season two, before he gets his armor out of the Razor Crest. May you lay molten in peace. I'm wondering how much more type of stuff, like, do they want to do more weapons and tech since he's got his armor, or are we going to see him go, you know, brawler mode even with a weapon? I kind of want to see a good balance
on the
of both.
Situation, yeah. What situation is he in, and what's appropriate at that time. You know, I'm all for giving us different types of fighting sequences, as long as they make sense to the plot, they serve the story, rather than, you know, oh, I've got a great idea for an action scene, let's just shoehorn that in somewhere, because, you know, that can happen in these types of shows. Sometimes somebody has a great idea and they just set it up as an action piece for the whole point of it, rather than it feeling like an actual chase, element of the story. So it just depends how the story went, but yeah, I'd be quite happy with that either way, I suppose.
The other thing I wonder about, this is a Star Wars show, and while it's definitely not about X-Wings and Starfighters and stuff like that, we did get decent amounts of space action in both Mando season one and season two, some aerial combat, some escapes, just straight up getting blown up because you're criminals, and I'm wondering how much the from all we can tell from additional publications, it's not just a model number. It does appear to be the name of Fett's ship will be Fire Spray. I'm wondering if we're gonna see like some more space, because he does
there is a ship more often. In the trailer, which is old. I was going to say Slave One there, so there you go, it's still not sticking. Of
and it won't for
and it
most
was
of us.
Space. Yep. It looked as if it was in space. So I hope so, but I think space battle scenes maybe are something we should kind of expect more of, I think, from the movies rather than the TV shows. Because I think they're the really budget-heavy stuff, you know, sometimes that
but pursuits and things like that, aerial...
doesn't look great unless you put a lot of money into it. So having little short, sharp moments like they had in Mando season one and season two, I think worked really well. It still made you feel like you were in that universe, but most of the show was ground level stuff, or in cockpit, just traveling somewhere and talking, which is absolutely fine as well. But yeah, I mean, I'm certainly not adverse to seeing the Slave One / Fire Spray kicking some more ass, because that was a pretty brutal ship to be going up against, as far as anyone's concerned. Yeah. The tricks and just sheer firepower that's in that ship, you know, are pretty severe.
While I'm not a big fan of the prequel trilogy, especially Attack of the Clones, I did love that. I can't remember if it was Rogue Squadron 3 on the GameCube or what, but one of them lets you, some arcade Star Wars fighter game allowed you to use Boba Fett's, or excuse me, Jango Fett's concussion grenades, you know, the ones that break apart the asteroids in Attack of the Clones. Uh-huh. He used one in this last thing as well. I liked that. I'd like to see more uses of maybe even in atmosphere type things, but yeah, the budget
budget thing to make it look good. They used it again in Mando, and it was like a nod to that, but you can't use it too much else.
No, I'm not saying that we need
somebody flying behind Boba, drop your depth charge.
I'm not saying use that same, not using the same tech, just the idea that that ship is used in combat situations more than say like the Razor Crest, which was transport. Like the Fets have been very offensive with the Fire Spray Slave One. So that's the only my only curiosity. But like you said, budget is an issue. You want it to look good, and hopefully they can figure out to give us just enough to make sure we know that it's still Star Wars. So I guess now we can take a good reset and take a word from our sponsors over at Grow Generation, guys. Take it away.
Grow Generation, where the pros go to grow. Grow Generation offers the best deals and discounts on the best grow products on the market. Grow Generation serves customers across the nation and carries a wide inventory of renowned cultivation brands. Go to www.growgeneration.com, where the pros go to grow.
Okay, well, let's do it that way, guys. Thank you. And we're talking about Ahsoka now, because why not? So Dave Filoni in the Empire magazine stuff, I'm trying to get the article up on screen for everyone. There you go. Had some things to say about the show and how exciting it is to write about it. And Cam, do you want to read his quote out? Sure. Do you have that up?
Yeah. So this was you know, I'm talking about the writing process of Ahsoka at the moment. So he'd said, "It's thrilling, I got to tell you. It's something you imagine doing for a long time, and then it's kind of startling when you're sitting there and now you have to do it." And just that copy that's in it, as you'd imagine, the show is offering him the chance to tell an Ahsoka story that he always wanted to tell with some new additions. "I thought of this adventure for Ahsoka for a long time, and it's interesting to see how it's evolved. Years ago, I never would have imagined that it's sprung from a branch of a tree that had anything to do with a guy like Din Djarin or a child that looks like Yoda. It's a great lesson for me on how when you have other creatives like Jon Favreau, they can help lend such dimension and depth to what you're doing."
Yeah. I mean, this is his baby, right? I mean, this is his baby, Ahsoka, you know, and not just Ahsoka, but this Mandalorian,
the story,
as people call it,
the arc.
Yep. And all of these connective pieces, you know, he talks about how he's had it in his mind for a long time. All of us have these adventures for these characters before we get to the stories being told. We all imagine where they're going and story ideas that we create ourselves. And it's cool to hear someone have that type of passion for it. It almost makes you wish more and more, you know, passionate fans like that would get the job, but other not just Star Wars, but other products, our projects as well. But yeah,
what's interesting is looking back at the way people reacted to Ahsoka when she first was introduced in that Clone Wars movie, which was a bad movie,
awful.
And you know, I watched that and went, "What are they doing? They're giving Anakin an apprentice. What is this rubbish? How can he have an apprentice?
Cannons, whatever we needed
between."
To be.
Attack of the Clones,
even back then.
Revenge of the Sith, and she just doesn't show up again.
Mm-hmm.
But hindsight is 2020. Look at us now. Ahsoka's made the jump to live action, and everybody's excited about Ahsoka show that's coming up. And that's all started from that point. And, you know, along with George Lucas, Dave Filoni is the creator of Ahsoka Tano, ultimately. And he now gets, and she's a popular character that
very
people want to see, because she has an incomplete story arc. We don't know what happens to her, you know. I mean, maybe it's something you wouldn't have worried about if Rebels had a different ending, but given the ending that Rebels did have, it's kind of a cliffhanger. And people have been waiting all this time to find out what happens, and hopefully, from what it seems anyway, we know Sabine Wren's been obviously cast now for Ahsoka. And I think the actress looks absolutely fine for that role. And, you know, it is going to continue on that story. And we would have guessed that, we had heard obviously that Mina Massoud had signed on as Ezra, and Lars Mikkelsen had signed on as Grand Admiral Thrawn. Mm-hmm. And you think this might be where they appear. I don't know if they'll necessarily be main characters that appear from early on. It may be that they turn up at the end or something, and we go on to whatever story comes next after Ahsoka. Is there an Ahsoka season 2, or will it be called something else? Way back, we had heard that there was a potential, when we had been told about all the different shows that were coming up, which were all right, you know, even the now
on hold,
Rangers of the New Republic.
Yeah.
It was right, the information that we got. And one of the things that was mentioned then was an Ezra Thrawn show. Mm-hmm. And it kind of makes me wonder whether they'll tease up to a certain point and then they'll announce a show that tells us about the backstory, what's been happening in these previous years between Ezra and Thrawn. This is just a guess from my point, but based on the rumour we heard, and out of that initial rumour, which was a Boba Fett show, an Ahsoka show, the Rangers of the New Republic, Gina Carano, basically focused show, which isn't really happening anymore. And they also mentioned an Ezra and a Thrawn show, but nothing's really ever come of that. We haven't heard any more information since then, but everything else has been ticked off that box except that. Now, it makes me wonder whether they're really a big part of this or they're just like the tease at the end. And in that respect, I don't know, like people are wondering, oh, when will Mina and Lars get confirmed? I don't know if they will or whether they'll keep that as a kind of secret thing towards the end of the season. I do not know. Maybe we'll find out more information closer to time, because it hasn't even started filming yet. And as you know, when things are filming tend to be when we start to hear little leaks and little details that we can piece together.
Yeah, and we also heard, I don't remember from who, maybe it was even Kathleen Kennedy that teased the idea of this, like a culminating event.
Well, we had heard that the description we were given was, and it was the same one Jon Favreau used months later. Imagine like Game of Thrones, but you had a different, mm-hmm. it's one story, but you had a different show for all the houses that mm-hmm. didn't, you know, rather than the show jumping between this side of the continent and that side of the continent, they were different shows, but they were all building towards one story. We were never told that would necessarily culminate an event, but by Kathleen Kennedy's own words, Favreau's own words, and what we had heard as well, that seems to be the suggestion, doesn't it, that it's building towards some kind of event, whether that's a show, movie. We've speculated on that. We don't know, but we've speculated that they could do either. They could even do a Disney Plus movie as a finale.
Direct a Disney Plus movie.
A big, you know, a crossover 8-episode series, 6 episodes. There's so many different things that they could do with it. But until we see where this story's going, it's hard to say for sure exactly what's going to come next after the things that have already been announced.
I have some deep concerns about Ahsoka, considering how we have her around right now, you know, and that and, image of the image, lines and circles. I mean, I know a lot
there
of
seems to be some sort of the imagery certainly would suggest that there may be some connection to the world between worlds, which was a place that I don't like and you don't like.
It opens a dangerous fucking door.
I do like what David Filoni did with Clone Wars and Rebels. I enjoyed both of them as they developed into what they could be anyway. I don't particularly like that part of Rebels, the world between worlds. It was okay using it to bring kind of Ahsoka back, but then maybe not using it again. But then when you look at, I mean, I'm looking right now, you've probably got it on the screen as well, the titles for Ahsoka. Mm-hmm. And it looks world between worlds to me. That's the way it looked like in the animated. So my suggestion, I would guess there is some kind of connection there. And it does worry me slightly. It does. Yeah. But, you know, I'm just going to trust and go with the plan at the moment.
The only reason I don't like it is because of that joke quote I made you know, the canon is whatever we need it to be from Pablo Hidalgo. And I joked that that was the case even before the Disney era. George Lucas was also a I'll do whatever I want to do type
person. Yeah, it was
kind
of different then, though, because it was almost like a canon had built up irrespective of him in some places, and then he would go, no, I'm pulling that back because ultimately it's my, you know, no one gets to decide this stuff unless I say so. And you kind of respected that a bit more because it was just one man's vision, you know. But
here the writer room can be like, hey, can we do this? And Pablo, fuck it. Just go ahead and do it. it's the canon's whatever I want it to be. I'm Pablo fucking Hidalgo. Fuck you, dick. I hate that I got books from him in here. Anyways.
we're not getting any interviews with him.
Nope. No. Just like I'll never be able to work at a Sony.
Would you want to though?
Yeah, because I think I could actually change things and
help
them.
Oh well, yeah. Other than if they said like you're in charge, we're a mess. Help.
No, I don't want. I just want to be a consultant and be able to go to different places on the internet.
They would just
and be like,
bring in the angry man here. Now and just get you what to read scripts.
Basically, and lay into them and be that person that goes across all like the technical issues. Do you guys realize that this beautiful property that you know, you have all these technological things right there? I've got one of them. It's called a ghost trap, and you ignore some text stuff so you could write a funny scene in a movie. Fuck you for doing that. But anyways, I guess we could go ahead and talk about some sequel trilogy stuff, Cam, because that's always big and popular among Star Wars fans.
Everyone
these
loves
days.
The sequel trilogy, don't they? I mean, you know, that's the one thing all Star Wars fans can unite on is our undying love of the sequel trilogy.
I guess
especially the last one. So
Kathleen Kennedy's comments.
Kathleen Kennedy, same art, you know, article, same magazine, Empire magazine. Kathleen Kennedy had some comments about a few things. Probably the most interesting, certainly, thing. I mean, she talked a little bit about Obi-Wan Kenobi and how it's an emotional return, you know, to have Hayden and Ewan together again and all that sort of stuff. But
the start of McGregor's career. Sure, it helped him shoot off the thing, but come on, Trainspotting was fucking amazing.
It wasn't even really, and before that, he was Shallow Grave. He'd, he'd done a few things. He was certainly on my radar. I'd watched quite a few of his films, maybe a Scottish actor, you know, British films. Makes sense, but but you know, Hayden didn't really, that wasn't his first thing ever, but I think you could say it made Hayden a household name.
Oh yeah,
face.
For him, sure, surely.
I'm not so sure it did necessarily with McGregor. I think he was already there.
And we're just nitpicking. We're not Kathleen Kennedy fans. We could take a shot here. We're taking it. You're out of touch, Kennedy. Anyways, go ahead, Reed.
but we're not going to talk about it because we all know how, you know, hype that is, and we know we'll wait to see it when it happens on screen now. Yep. So what she did say was, you know, she was asked specifically, could, you know, the other age you explore, and what about sequel trilogy characters returning? And she said, certainly those are not characters we're going to forget. They will live on. And those are conversations that are going on with the creative team as well. So it looks like they're looking at, do we push on with some of these characters into more stories? And obviously, when we look at those characters, we could be looking at, just off the top of my head, Rey, Poe,
Ben,
and Finn would be your main kind of
Where's
three.
Where's Rose
that you would,
at? Would look to. Cam? She's.
Well, I mean,
bring her back, Miss.
I mean, you
fight
could
the enemy with
back,
love.
You absolutely could bring back Rose if they hadn't completely sidelined her in that
completely
final
shit
movie
the
in the
character.
First place and made her just not one of the main characters anymore because she just sat in the back and had a few lines.
That's
because
they really just completely wrote a really crappy ending. If you guys notice, we're saying character Rose, we're not mentioning the actress at all because this is she was paid to play a part and she played her part to the best of her ability.
The Last of the Jedi, but it was more the corner lines.
Oh yeah,
it was
awful. Awful, and so I can't save a character.
But I really
like
feel bad about what they did to her in the third one because they really just did say like, okay, so the previous direction made you a main character. We're really getting you back again to just being a nobody, okay? So you now sit in this, you eat in this canteen over here, this, the Stars, you come with me. And it just felt like that.
Yeah.
When they had built her up too much in the previous one, ignore her. That's like, you know, building up Lando and Empire Strikes Back, and then he's just in the background, going, what, hey, Han, oh, hey, Lando.
Yeah.
And doesn't have any involvement in Return of the Jedi. You just wouldn't do that.
Well, they didn't write a garbage character with Lando. They actually made him a half-decent character.
Yeah, but characters can be redeemed very easily just by saying, I want to make this person important, you know.
Look at Boba Fett. You and I didn't care for him.
Exactly. You can take a character and you can write an interesting story about them. People care a little bit more. But yeah, I mean, in terms of those sequel trilogy characters coming back, I think they certainly have been leaving it for a while to kind of let the storm that was built by those films calm down a little bit, and things are a little bit more positive now. But there'll certainly be some fans out there, guaranteed there'd be some in our comment section that would say, I won't watch anything to do with those characters again because they lost my interest. You know, yeah. I'm not interested in it. But I always say, you know, people say that, but if they produced a good film or a good, you know, show that people are like, this is fucking good, they would watch it and they would have this, okay, yeah, I kind of enjoyed that. You know, you can't just pretend you'll through some, I won't boycott, never watch Star Wars again. All the people that say they'll never watch Star Wars again, you know, they come on to comments and they discuss every aspect of a show and you're like that. You've watched that. I mean, you know, just don't lie, you've watched it.
Yeah.
And then come on to complain about it. If you say, ask me, I'm done with Star Wars, be done with it then, that's fine. Don't watch any of the stuff that it comes out. I prefer to kind of pick and choose. And if I watch something that's good, I'll say that it's good. If I watch something that's shit, I'll call it for shit and see where we go at the end.
And I can't watch Spider-Man 3 anymore. More.
I cut up the Blu-ray.
Yeah, that. So I'm done with that. Why did you have it in Blu-ray in the first place? Because when it originally came out, I had them all, and I just decided that it's not worth ever having. So
tell I bought a cheap DVD version because my son liked it when he was little. When he was little, it was one of his favorite Spider-Man films.
I have my prequel trilogy DVDs and the cases, and they're there. I haven't put them in. And for forever, and I never will. I will without monetary compensation. I'm never watching the prequels again. And honestly, guys,
I don't think I'd watch the sequels again.
I don't think I'd I was going to say the exact same thing.
Last Jedi and Rise of Skywalker twice each, which is the least of any Star Wars film that I've ever watched. I don't have any particular urge to watch either of them for a third time. Force Awakens I watched maybe a few times more, but I wouldn't go back to that either. But yeah. But, you know, if they can make new, better stories, then they may, you know, they may get me interested in these characters again. And an interesting kind of segue on this one is there was an article from Unilad in which they spoke to Adam Driver. And he was asked whether he would ever kind of consider coming back to any of the kind of franchises he's been in. Specifically, you know, they're hinting at, you know, space-based franchises, i.e. Star Wars. And I was quite surprised because I thought he'd be like,
I'm done.
He's done nothing. Seem to be any reason for him to come back. But he did say, no, I'm totally not against it. For me, it's a filmmaker's medium. So my only thing is working with great filmmakers. But for the size, it's never been interesting to me to an extent. There's interesting things about working on both. And what he means is big movies, small movies.
He's done a lot of smaller indie feeling and even especially bigger budget, still Wars, small,
you know,
feeling.
He's pretty hard working. I mean, he's in something every other week.
Yeah.
I always just follow people that I'd be interested in working with and whether I'd be right for the part. Things like that. No, definitely not adverse, you know. So he's not against it in any way. But as I said in that article that just published today on LRMonly.com, of all of them to come back, well, we have a bit of a problem with Ben. He's fucking dead. He dead. And he killed himself in a redemptive act to bring back don't get me started. That's what happened.
I know.
You know.
I know.
Basically, so the same thing kind of happened to Vader, but just not as good and not as profound. But yeah, that's kind of what happened to Ben Solo, if you like, and kind of killed the Skywalker line forever at that point. So,
what do you do?
Yeah, why would you bring back the only flashbacks. Thing I can think of? That
Force
I
Ghost
would be
is
like,
awful.
Yes, if I heard Adam Driver was back as an animated show about Luke,
the Knights of Ren,
and Ben Solo, the younger years, you know. So basically the Wonder Years, but with Ben Solo, so like the Dark Years or something like that. Maybe even Grogu getting involved, but animated, so therefore we would have Driver's voice and Hamill's voice, and somebody would have to make up a voice for Grogu, I guess. You know, that,
someone
that
was
kind of
cooing
thing.
Out there on the set.
Well, I mean, you know, you expect eventually all that.
Yeah.
You know,
cool. I did.
I wonder if he talks like he's just one day. Like, frog in my throat, had I? I haven't talked for 50 years. Back am I now? Anyway, Luke, terrible Jedi school you have. Terrible. So I don't know, but you know what I mean. That's something I would watch. I'd watch that animated show and go, this is fucking cool. Yeah. But, you know,
if it wasn't aimed at 12-year-olds,
I just don't really get it. You know, why we would bring him back. As much as that he was my favourite character in those sequel trilogies, and I liked Ben Solo, and I liked Adam Driver, and I liked Kylo Ren, but there's no story left for him to go, because he's dead.
He's dead. We can only go into the past and the best way. No, stop that. And I also hate the people that are all like, Force Ghost, where him and Rey are in a relationship, even though he's a ghost, and they're both training Jedi in the future. And I'm like, oh my God.
Like, can you just imagine? So pitch for a show, right? So here's my pitch. The show's going to be about Rey, but she's having a relationship with a ghost. So she's in an active relationship with a ghost, the ghost of Ben Solo. And, you know, it'll be about the problems they face, where one of them's material and one's not, you know. How do they do couple things together?
You need to stop talking, Cam. You are making people's pants both tighter and wetter at this moment. And that is a horrible thing, because they are eating that shit up.
I know, that's the point. There's some people that would listen to that and go, oh my God, that sounds great, and you know, that ain't Star Wars.
No.
But then, you know, maybe that's as far away from Star Wars, but still would make money as the new Ghostbusters was away from Ghostbusters.
Could be.
But there's an audience there for it. It's not you.
Yeah, I think there's a lot less people that would want Ghost Driver to be in a relationship with
Rey. It could just be like
Rey,
basically Ghost, so, you know, Rey building a lightsaber. And you see Adam Driver's ghost coming behind him.
Make it stop. And then even in a more serious line possibility of him being a Force ghost while Rey is running an academy, I still don't like that idea. Because I'm still upset. Because I'm still upset at the redemptive arc that they took, and the fact that he dies the way he does at the end. So in my
but
mind,
that's canon now. It's safe.
It is. But in my mind, it's done. It's done. To bring him back undoes all of that all over again, because now you can introduce more issues, more dynamic, more conversations between him and Rey, it either becomes a series of retcons to move someone else.
But if you
forward.
Bring Rey back, I think it'd be weird if they brought Rey back and you didn't at some point she wasn't able to have a conversation with Ben at some point. I'm
maybe
not saying he'd show up and be there all the time, but
maybe
just at some point to give her a bit of advice, because they had,
but not as a main character.
Whether you like the whole dyad thing or not, that's like a connection that they had through the Force, stronger than supposedly anybody else in 1,000 years or whatever. So that connection would surely maintain after death, given that you would expect, you know, Luke after the Redemptive, after the way he took you know, Anakin was brought back into the fold, that Luke and Yoda, and that'd be like, come, let's show you how to do this Force Ghost business, and then you can go back and give Rey advice again after this, you know.
Maybe so one conversation, that's it.
Luke sometimes, you know, like in the EU books, Luke would quite often speak to Anakin, you know, about stuff and get advice from him at one point. Do you know what I mean? And they kind of, certainly when he was starting the Jedi Temple, didn't he used to speak to Anakin sometimes before school?
He only had... Anakin had one conversation with Leia post-death, and I'm only thinking maybe one or two with Luke, if I can recall correctly.
Definitely, I remember them talking on Yavin 4 when he did the Jedi Temple.
At the temple, but there was, that may have been Exar Kun.
I know there was somebody with him. Pretending to be Anakin, wasn't there as well?
So yeah. I'm not 100% certain, but...
The point is, Force Ghosts should be able to pop up whenever
they can.
Need them to give you that bit of...
But if you
advice.
Use
they
it
help
the
you
wrong...
jam, but they can go, you've been a dick.
Right, and if
and
you
I'm
use it...
Tell the... you've been a dick. Like an intervention, cosmic intervention.
Right, and that's what I'm saying. Like, if he shows up for a good exposition scene or one of those good, you know, kicks in the ass scenes, sure, I can co. But to have them co-lead the academy as ghosts, no, he's a ghost trainer. That's what I'm afraid of. That's what I'm afraid of. I'm 100% with you. Show up once, maybe even twice, towards the beginning and towards the end. You shouldn't do that. I told you so. But hey, good job. You know, that could be okay. But you and I both know that there's a real thin line that could be crossed very easily with that.
That there would be some fans that would absolutely just lap that up, and that's the sad truth. A lot of people just these days, I think, just give me the fan service. What toys am I supposed to buy? I want to see this on screen. Give me it. I don't care if the story's good, as long as I see the thing that I'm excited to see, you know. And I think a lot of movies have become about that now, you know. And The Force Awakens is a movie like that.
That's one of the worst. It's, dude, Red Letter Media on their Afterlife reviews said, well, I know you haven't watched it yet, but. What they said about The Force Awakens, they said that was the worst mistake ever. Yeah, they said that started all of it. I don't know if it necessarily started all of it, but yeah, from that to No Way Home, Ghostbusters Afterlife.
I think what they're saying is it made a ton of money. It was really, really successful.
All the studios were like, let's do that.
So rehash. When people looked at it and said they didn't care about the rehash, they basically had the same plot as the first one, and people lapped it up. So we can do that as well. Yep. So I actually get that analogy.
But now it's to where too many have done it with too many properties, and people like you and I are like, okay, that's it. We're full, guys. We're full. Belly's
I want
full.
To just deal.
But youngers
I
aren't,
just put
aren't
on
full yet.
Movies, you know, but. But what that is a major problem then, that we have a generation these days who you say, oh, you've watched this film? No, that's old. Why would I watch an old film?
Yeah, exactly. Like
I
said, it's for
it's
the
old.
Younger
I mean,
ones.
When I was young and I heard about the classic movies, I was going back and watching movies for the before I was born.
Yeah.
You know,
about the
70s
only...
movies, 60s movies, 50s movies even, you know, that were, you know, classics and, you know, and became some of my favourite films. I mean, you know, out of my top films of all time, I think in my top three, which is probably Empire, Raiders of the Lost Ark, and The Godfather. If I went top five, you could say, you know, maybe Jaws would be in there as well. Well, that's two of them that were before I was even born.
Yeah.
So that's a crazy thing, but it is something I've heard. You know, even when I was younger and I would be training people at my daytime job, and I would come across younger people at times, and they would say, you know, what movies they're into, and it was whatever is it now, you know, they will watch because it's new and it's supposed to be for them, but they just have some, well, it'll be old and shitty because it's, you know, because it's an old film, is going to be crap. So what I think they're doing now is repackaging the same thing in a modern way to say inject this into your veins. This is good shit. If it was good shit for the previous generation, it'll be good shit for you as well. Mm-hmm. Come and get it. You know, dinner bell ringing kind of thing.
Remember this? Remember that?
It's all gone. You know, and it just becomes well, where's the story?
Yeah.
You know, where's the actual
Star Wars, Star Wars. Sure, you're showing the right images. You're showing the right name, but is it really Star Wars? Is it really Ghostbusters? Is it really Ninja Turtle? You know, that's what one that even when they fuck up the aesthetics, they still manage to get everything else right about the turtles: a team, brothers, a father. You know. The themes of the turtles transcends across the original comics to the kid friendly cartoon.
We see it in Star Wars as well.
You know,
and that's the difference between Mandalorian and the sequel trilogy. If you look at
Solo,
Solo is like the sequel trilogy in terms of it's just a here's all the stuff you're supposed to want to see because this is what fans want to see. Here it is in a package. Go enjoy it. Look, Millennium Falcon. Look, Furry Dice. You know, and it's just a tick box.
Yeah.
Rogue One gets classed as it's just pure fan service. But the reason Rogue One works is because it's about
an event. It feels like Star Wars.
That happens right before, and it changes very slightly the way you look at Star Wars. Was it perfect? No, but it fits in. Yeah. You know, it's like...
And it feels like a Star Wars movie.
And it feels like a Star Wars movie. Yeah, there was a lot of fan service in it. But is that fan service, you know, seeing an alien that you haven't seen in a while and going, oh, you know, some fan service is okay. But when a whole movie's just...
Remember, you know, without any of
look
the
at this,
things
remember
that make
that
it...
happen.
Yeah. And I can agree. Force Awakens definitely showed Hollywood, and like you said, and the younger generations, and that includes me. I'm a millennial or a xennial or zillennial or however you people want to call those of us born in early mid 80s. It's weird because like I can remember being a little stuck up and being like black and white. Like I'd watch movies from the 60s and 70s, but black and white was harder for me to get into when I was eight years old. But by the time I was 11, 12, fuck yeah, give me black and white. I don't care. I want to just consume
good stories.
I remember
one of our TVs that we had in the house because we only had one TV in the house, and then there was a black,
my grandparents, white
TV
black
and
white
my mum and dad's room.
Mm-hmm.
And occasionally I would watch stuff that was supposed to be in colour, therefore on black and white, just stuff on terrestrial channels and stuff like that. So I guess it just didn't bother me, but
but like that was it. But like I said, by the time I was 11, 12 years old, it didn't matter as long as it was a good story, you know, that's it. And today, like you said,
people don't have the attention span these as well. Sometimes it's just like, get me to the money shot. I want the money shot. You know,
give me the in-game portals scene.
I want the scene that's going to make me cry because I remember what it was like when I was a kid, or I want the scene that's going to make me jump up and cheer because my favourite characters appeared back in the screen. And I fell for that as well in the first week.
Yeah, we all
it's
did.
Always,
did.
Especially the Millennium Falcon scene. See, when they run towards the Millennium Falcon, which to me is still the best scene in that movie, the way they cut to it. And then the Millennium Falcon's just lying there in a jump pelt and they go away. That's a great scene, but that's fan service done well. It's done in service at that point of the story. It's just bringing in this old ship and it lets them connect back up with Han. Where they go from there then just goes into formulaic territory. Let's just do the same thing we did in the first film. But you know, fan service is okay sometimes, but you know, you can't build a movie on it. Build a story first and then add in these little bits if you need to. It's just like companies are just trying too hard to get people invested in franchises
and make money as cheap as you can, and they kind of have to, because goddamn people won't go to the fucking theaters and won't
what
buy
the
shit.
What MCU has done is maybe save Eternals, which I've not seen yet, is he's kept a really high standard. Once the standards slip, that's it. It's just they let anything else, you know. Yeah. There's not people rushing out and buying merchandise for Knight Rider, which made 100,000 episodes, and you know, there was maybe some good ones, but there was also a lot of shit as well, you know, because it wasn't that good.
It's
and people
are
spending money on it.
David
Hasselhoff. Sorry, but they don't. And that's something they keep trying to bring back. Knight Rider, everything like that, let's bring it back. And every time they bring it back, it's just shitter and shitter than the previous version that they did. Because, do you know what? A fucking talking car with superpowers.
Can only go so far.
That doesn't work anymore.
Yep.
But because it's a franchise, because it's a name people recognise, they will keep bringing it back. And it's the same with luckily with Star Wars, they're supposed to, they seem to be trying to build this out and take their time with it a little bit more. But this was always my fear of Star Wars when it came to Disney, and it's exactly what they'll do with Sony and with Ghostbusters. If that Ghostbusters makes money, they'll make a sequel. If that the new Ghostbusters doesn't make above a certain threshold that they've got, they will just reboot it a different way further down the line and try again until they make it something that, that people will spend money on.
Yeah, pretty much. You can look at Sony and Spider-Man, even though Amy Pascal had to actually have Kevin Feige come into her office and tell her that the movies they were turning out were crap, the third Amazing would fail, and that she should let Marvel help. And she admitted, by her own words, she said, we were going places we shouldn't have, and the last few films weren't good. Those are. I'm paraphrasing. You guys can look it up. It's in that big Marvel Studios book. She said it. She called the last. Now look, she could have just meant the last two. Amazing. I have a feeling she probably meant the last three. I could be projecting, but anyways, I guess we could go ahead and wrap it up, Cam. Any other Star Wars stuff you wanted to throw out real quick?
That's awesome. Pretty much. It's all been all the kind of Empire coverage has been the only thing that really had this week.
Yeah, but hey, you know, right around the corner, it's the day after Thanksgiving for most of you that will catch this when it goes up, and Book of Boba Fett's just slightly over a month away. I'm excited for that. I can't wait. You guys can, of course, catch all of the latest entertainment information on LRMonline.com, genreverse.com as well. Everything that goes up here, toy things, my wife likes to write about stuff like that. Of course, Barside Buzz is always scouring the internet for credible rumors and fun little things to follow, and leaks and things like that. All of the podcasts, of course, go up on the site, and you guys can get those wherever you get your podcasts from. The Dragon Review doing Wheel of Time in a very, very interesting format that Cam host and came up with Christine and I, who have not read the books. He kind of leads us through a set of questions that gives book fans, hey, these guys are off their rockers, or oh my god, how did they guess that? Or ooh, that,
you
was
know,
really
it's amazing.
Close hit.
One of the things I've been seeing online a lot is book fans asking non-book fans, what do you think? And they're really keen to find out. So I find it interesting asking you guys questions, because
absolutely,
like, I would never have thought that, you know. Yeah. So
check that out. Of course, the Daily Cup of Genre. Tomorrow's episode is pretty much all a guest segment with Jason Stewart, or today's episode for what you guys are watching. And that was a lot of fun. Breaking Geek Radio, Marvel Multiverse Mayhem. First two episodes of Hawkeye covered on Thursday's episode. And guys, all of that goes up on our YouTube channel, along with the amazing interviews from our interview team, like Nancy Gigg and Manny, Spanish exclusive, red carpet, Zoom, in person, on set. Look, we're round tables, voice actors behind the camera, in front of the camera. It's all there. Please hit the subscribe button, leave some comments, thumbs ups and downs, and all that good stuff. And Cam, I'm done, man. You got anything else you want to plug?
Nope.
All right, guys. Take it easy. Hope you had a good Thanksgiving, and may the Force be with you.